Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Juiciest Bits. I'm Mandy Elliott, soon to be joined by my co-host, Charlie Barber. And today we are giving you, but mostly us, a little treat because we are talking about a ridiculous film that we both, love to talk about anyway. We are talking about John Woo's 1997 film, Face Off, starring John Travolta and Nicolas Cage. Mostly we are just going through ways in which it makes no sense and why we love it. One thing to keep in mind, there are mentions of sexual assault. We don't get into it too much, but it is briefly mentioned. So if that is not for you, that's okay. Give this one a miss. Otherwise, we look forward to entertaining you, regaling you with our questions about the continuity and just basic sense making of this movie. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of The Juiciest Bits when we talk about Face Off.
Okay, are we doing this?
We're doing it.
Okay, great. Right now?
Right now.
Okay, great. Hi, I'm Charlie.
Hi, I'm Mandy.
And this is
The Juiciest Bits Podcast.
Woo! Yay!
We did it. We've been working on that for a while.
Yeah, yeah. We actually practiced it beforehand.
Yeah, yeah.
Did a little choir. Yeah.
Yeah.
Made sure we're in sync.
You should see our dance.
God, it would bring tears to your eyes.
And joy to your heart.
Yes, that's right. Tears of joy. Not of horror.
I mean, maybe of horror. But...
Oh, no. And today we're talking about the natural sequel to Three Women. Two Angry Men.
Two Angry Men.
Also the prequel to 12 Angry Men.
Yes, which was made before.
So it's a prequel after the fact.
Yeah.
They just have to add 10 more men. Mm-hmm. One of them being, what's his name? Fonda. Henry.
Henry.
Henry Fonda.
Yeah.
And then you've got the complete set.
Jack Klugman.
Oh, Jack. What a boy.
What a boy.
What a boy. All right. Well, yeah. So we're talking Two Angry Men.
Yeah.
What's its alternate title? We just watched this.
Trying to think of something clever. No, we're talking about Face Off. Obviously, it's Face Off.
Off.
Yeah.
Off with the faces.
Off with the
John
faces.
Woo's cinematic masterpiece featuring one willowy Nicolas Cage and one somewhat barrel-shaped John Travolta.
Yes, indeed.
But since they both have hairy chests, they're basically indistinguishable.
They're basically the same. Yeah.
I think that's what it is. Like, that's the plot of the movie.
Yeah. They're
like... Your faces, whatever. We'll do whatever with them, but the rest of your body, like, no one can tell.
Your height difference, whatever. Don't worry about it.
And it's a significant height difference,
isn't
it?
It is. In the movie, they say it's not, but it's not nothing.
There's a lot of hand-wavy things. Do you think they had, because it's John Travolta's taller, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think Nicolas Cage was stood on boxes?
Could be. Or lifts.
Did he pull the Tom Cruise? Lifts.
But I mean, yeah, he's all over the place.
Just a fancy word for male platform shoes.
Yeah, inside platforms. Or
inside platforms. Oh. The platform within.
Yeah.
It's a stiletto for your soul.
Ooh.
Yeah. And this movie is also, oh my God, there's so many connections with Minority Report as well.
That's true.
So it's about grieving a dead kid. And it's also remarkably cavalier about how replaceable dead kids are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I personally do have a hard time telling one kid from another. but it seems cold even to me that a family that's, like, grieving the loss of a son will suddenly be all better when they just, like,
get a brand new son.
Get a brand new son from, like, the spare son shop or
unfortunate
something.
Unfortunate dead people.
Unfortunate dead people. Oh my God.
I believe that makes the child an orphan, is what the word is.
Ah, yes. The orphan store.
The orphan store. I'll take one, please.
I would like 1 6-year-old child with a bowl cut, if you please, sir. We have many bowl cuts on offer. What's your history with this movie?
Actually, I just saw it for the first time maybe a few months ago. We were watching. Whoa. Yeah, we were just kind of in the mood for a.
Were you having a cage fest?
A goof about. Okay. I don't even know if it was a cage fest, but we just felt like watching it, and wow, yeah, it's. I didn't know it's what to something. Expect, but it is quite something. And I was excited to rewatch it just to see if it was as much something as I first experienced it to be.
Was it more of a something or less of a something?
It was maybe even more of a something because I watched it by myself and I was just like, what am I watching?
Yeah.
Is this brilliant? And I just don't get it. Or is this terrible and I love it?
I mean, yeah, you don't have to choose either.
That's true.
Both states can exist simultaneously.
I think it's the second one, though.
Okay. Oh, my God. Yeah, well, and this movie has such a cult following. Like, people are, like, have boners for this movie.
It's wild.
Yeah, and I think they're making a sequel.
Are they?
I think so.
Whose face are they going to take off this time?
I think it's with both John Travolta and Nicolas Cage. What? They're going to somehow resurrect John Travolta. Or, I mean, this movie, spoiler alert, it's not clear to me that he's actually dead. I feel like he bounces back all the time.
Yeah, I mean, he looks... he's not... okay, yeah.
I'm sorry, Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage is dead. Wait. No.
Castor Troy.
Castor Troy is dead.
Yes. We have to use character names because...
oh, it's so confusing.
Big reveal. They switch faces.
By taking their faces off.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, a very dangerous movie to act in because of the facial surgery that must go on.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine the amount of, waivers that they would have to sign?
So many waivers.
Holy shit. The legal action that must have been involved in this.
They're lucky there was no scarring is what I'm...
oh, my God. Yeah. And to do it twice.
There would have been hell to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just asking for trouble. My God. I don't really have an interesting history with this movie either. I watched it a while ago and thought it was stupid.
Yes.
And then I watched it for this, just like this week. And thought it was a genius movie.
Oh, okay.
So a real turnaround for me. Mostly due to actually how surprised I was by Nicolas Cage's performance.
Mm-hmm.
I had remembered it being, like, both of these dudes just being, like, absolute handballs the whole time. And this time, again, spoiler for later when I do a summary. But, like, Nicolas Cage... when he turns into Sean, suddenly becomes this like complex and heart-wrenching and like pathos driven. And it's like he brings more to the character than like John Travolta has both before and after. Whereas like John Travolta just gets to be like a ham sort of like the entire time.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage takes it in such a different direction. And it was like surprising to me, even though I had already seen it. And I was just kind of struck by, what an interesting choice that was.
Yeah, his performance is so varied. Like, the first time we see him, he's...
Flouncy
and singing the Hallelujah Chorus. And he's like, Google-eyed and, like...
he's a classic Cage, let's just say.
Yeah, he is wild. But he's a classic Cage times 100.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's bouncing off the walls.
Oh, we see, like three or four of the most well-known internet memes of Cage are in this movie.
Yeah.
In that opening, like, several scenes.
Totally. And then all of a sudden he becomes like he is in Family Man, like just kind of serious and kind of softening up and trying to, deal with the world.
Well, also like trying to have this like outsized persona and... Yeah. Okay. So we're going to talk about this later and about how our feelings about these different performances, because I think they're very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
May I do a summary?
Please do.
Excellent. So we start with credits as family man Sean Archer, that's John Travolta, is standing with a kid on a circus merry-go-round and, oh, holy shit, that's another Minority Report.
Another Minority Report.
fuck. So weird that these, like, dude-focused, like movies about, like, loss of children are, like, focus on merry-go-rounds is, like, a yeah. symbol of childhood innocence and loss. Spoiler alert. Wow, cool. So this Kodak moment of father and child is cut against the flounciest, as said, Nicolas Cage, playing one Caster Troy, wearing an enviable mustache.
Oh, yeah.
Sipping a milkshake and looking at Sean through the scope of a gun.
Right, right, right.
Also, I noticed as the names were coming up in the credits, John Travolta was listed first and Nicolas Cage was listed second, which seems bonkers to me now.
Mm-hmm.
Since Nicolas Cage is obviously much bigger of a star. Mm-hmm. But was Travolta the bigger star at this point? Because it's not also alphabetical.
No, because Cage had won an Oscar a couple years before, and this came out like within a month of Con Air. Like, he was just...
Oh, my God.
All the big 90s movies.
The same year and the next as Con Air?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and, like, The Rock was coming up, and...
Holy fuck.
Yeah, Cage was on fire.
So why would they... I mean, this is maybe boring, but, like, why would John Travolta be listed first, then? He's not the biggest star, and he's also not alphabetical. Like, what other reason would there be to list it?
I mean, unless there's some sort of, like nostalgia for Travolta, or maybe he has a better agent.
Could be. Who knows? All right. Well, anyways, Caster Troy eventually shoots Sean Archer, but he shoots too good, and it goes right through Sean and into his son. Oh, no! And everyone is disappointed. Caster is bummed he didn't kill Sean, and Sean is bummed he got shot and also that his kid is dead. Cut yes. two.
Well said.
6 years later, Sean is at work looking terrible. His face is gray and he's got a 10 o'clock shadow and he's a real grump because he's also an FBI guy who's been hunting his nemesis and baby killer, Caster, all this time. Our boy is relentless and has been taking not a single break all these years. And we know this because he stomps into a meeting with his underlings, including a young Margaret Cho. Hell yeah, bisexual queen. And says, you can have a break when we get a break in the case. And okay, my own workplace is terrible, but this one sounds so much worse. Like, where are the FBI union reps?
Yeah, nowhere to be seen.
Cops have incredible unions that literally allow them to get away with murder while having nice administrative vacations on full pay. So why is no one stopping this maniac from withholding lunch breaks?
Agreed.
Tell me why.
It's a dark place.
Ugh. Anyway, I guess it's properly motivating to some because they do figure out where Caster is going to be. Meanwhile, Caster is doing something weird with a bomb in a convention center. And then he head bops to Handel's Messiah for a bit and grabs a chorister's butt for a bit and then goes off to meet his brother Pollux, the dweebiest incarnation of Alessandro Nivola, at the airplane that he's going to take off in because they don't want to be in town when the bomb goes off. Okay, and I just need to do a side note, Alessandro Nivola.
Please do.
Bear with me. So, you all probably know him best for his uncredited role as Mr. Dixon in the 1996 adaptation of Emma with Kate Beckinsale, Mark Strong with hair, and Prunella Scales.
Mark Strong with hair.
It's very unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
But you will likely know him second best for his very much credited role as Henry Crawford.
Yes.
In the 1999 adaptation of Mansfield Park, where we see his butt.
That was a formative time for me.
It was for me too. a movie that is so great and also has Sir Harold Pinter
yes.
playing a role in it as a true monster.
It's true.
It's like bonkers to think about.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Great movie. Highly recommend. Very mm-hmm. fun. Not accurate to the book, but a delight all the same.
But you get to see Alessandro Nivola's butt.
Oh, so. My God. And it's a good butt.
It is a good butt.
More about that later. oh, no, wait. I just wanted to also say...
Got all frazzled.
I did. Thinking about his butt. Alessandro Nivola in this movie makes me understand the She's All That effect.
Yeah.
Because in this movie, he's such a dweeb, and he also looks, like, little and shrimpy.
Yeah.
But my memory of him from Mansfield Park, for example, he's, like, real big and, like, real hot. And
he's a dreamboat.
He's a dreamboat!
Like, that's...
He's, like, a swole Regency hero.
Yeah, potentially the least believable part of this movie, and that is saying something,
mm-hmm.
is that Alessandro Nivola is a nerd.
Yeah! Yeah, just like a
dweeby, like, weakling. Yeah, no.
And it has to be the glasses. This
it has
is my
to
thing.
Be the glasses and like the sweater vests and the bad hair and the like.
He sort of like hunches and yeah. He does the little T-Rex arms.
He does a good job, but like, he's too good looking. Like, everybody can see.
This movie also does the same thing with Thomas Jane.
Yes.
Where they're like, no one will know that he's like actually a hot person if we put glasses on him.
That's true.
Also, why is Thomas Jane in this movie? He's there for a hot second.
I don't know.
Weird.
Why do a lot of things
why
happen in
are
this
many
movie?
Things here? Also, give Margaret Cho more to do. Girl is wasted here as well.
It's true.
Okay, back to the movie. All those missed breaks pay off because Sean rocks up to the airplane with many FBI people just as Castor is trying to fly away. And after many shenanigans involving an airplane crashing into a hangar and Sean and Castor having their first face off.
Nice.
Castor is knocked unconscious by the old turbojet trick and captured by Sean. Then Sean goes home and tells his wife that Castor is off the streets and that finally now he'll go to therapy and talk about his dead son, and his wife is duly grateful, and we're like, je m'excuse, your son died 6 years ago and you haven't talked about him at all since? Like, better late than never, I guess, but wow, yikes.
Yeah.
Just a testament to how men will never go to therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
Even when they have, like, a literal death of a child.
Mm-hmm.
Too busy at work.
Too busy. Too, yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta and shove those feelings down.
And this is all proven out by the fact that Sean immediately goes back to the office, even though he told his wife he was done with work. and subsequently has several temper tantrums when people congratulate him for a job well done. And then has another temper tantrum when he looks at the bomb specs that were taken off a floppy disk that were brought in by a captured Pollux. And it's very clear that this is not a man on the road to healing. When Pollux won't spill the beans about the location of the bomb, everyone immediately suggests this radical new procedure, face-off surgery. And at no point is anyone like, let's just, like, talk to him a bit more.
Yeah.
They're just like, this is useless. It's face-off surgery or nothing.
It's our only option.
It's literally what they say.
Yeah.
And Sean is like, you make good points. All right, let's do it. So he goes back home and is like, honey, about that, I'm going to be busy at work for a while. And then runs off to get his face swapped. And we see it and it's gross. We see the whole surgery. As a medical professional yourself, what are your thoughts on the surgery? You're a doctor.
I am a doctor, yes. I thought that was the coolest. I mean, okay, my favorite bit was they basically cut around their face and then they use this sucky plastic mask thing to suck it off.
Off the face.
Off the face. And then they put Castor Troy's face in this kind of, or they...
Jello.
Like, yeah. This kind of, like, bath.
Preservative Jello.
And then they take off Sean Archer's face and put that in preservative Jello and put Castor Troy's face back on and sort of, like, weld the faces back on. And there are no scars. And it's amazing. I mean...
I didn't know medicine was this advanced.
Not in 1997. I had no idea.
But you know what? Here's the answer. It's Canadian medicine.
Oh, yes. Because Colm Fiore.
Because Colm Fiore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Colm Fiore.
We
Canadian
have some
legend,
stuff going on.
King of Stratford, Colm Fiore, is conducting the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows best.
Yep.
And his hands played a very funny Petruchio and an even funnier King Lear.
Yes.
So, you know, he can do no wrong. Surgery-wise.
Oh, and he can also give them a new voice box.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you're getting ahead of me.
Oh, sorry. Oh. I'll shut up.
When Sean wakes up, he's magically turned into Nicolas Cage with John Travolta's voice. Ha ha. How did they do it? Because his vocal implant needs to be adjusted. So, okay, this is my next question. Do you think that when they were filming the scene, Nicolas Cage was just like mouthing the words and John Travolta was behind the camera, like throwing his voice like a ventriloquist?
I wish that were the case. Probably not, but I...
Little known skill of John Travolta is ventriloquism.
Yeah. They'd be like, no need for ADR. We got it. Travolta has this hidden talent.
Just like somehow makes him even creepier than he already is.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's forget the Scientology. Ventriloquism is the real unsettling factor. Yeah.
Terrible.
All right. So now, Sean as Castor... is bundled off to a Guantanamo Bay secrets prison where Pollux is already being held. And as he is, he's fitted with these weird little magnetic boots that look for all the world like ski boots.
They do.
And then he goes to find little brother Pollux. Okay, pause again. Sorry. I know I'm pausing so much. Castor is a weird enough name, but Pollux? Like, are these real names?
They're Greek mythology. I think Castor and Pollux are the sons of Leda.
Oh my god, you're so smart. Okay.
I think.
Just like, these are classic, like, white boy rapper names. Castor and Pollux Troy.
But I think that...
Oh, Troy! Yeah. Oh, I'm an... Oh, okay. All right.
No, like, I think, yeah, that's taken.
Oh, okay.
Separately.
All right. I was like, well, no wonder they became criminals. Their parents abused them.
Yeah, it's not clear to me why they're named that, though.
Yeah, they just, like, are really good buds.
Yeah.
But they don't do anything epic.
Anybody who knows more about Greek mythology than we do.
Or little-known Castor and Pollux, let us know.
Yeah. I must
tell us
do
about
a,
Castor.
Yeah,
book report.
Correction section.
Oh.
So their mother was Leda, uh-huh. But they had different fathers. Castor was the mortal son of Tyndareus, the king of Sparta, while Pollux was the divine son of Zeus, who raped Leda in the guise of a swan. The pair are thus an example of heteropaternal superfecundation, which means...
Superfecundation,
which means basically twins born of two different fathers.
That's a really long way of saying just like, yeah, they had different dads.
Yeah, but at the same time, she ovulated twice and each...
Oh, they're twins.
They're twins.
Oh, shit.
But like half twins because two different fathers.
Is that possible? As a medical doctor, look at that.
For the record, I'm not a medical doctor. If you hadn't guessed already.
But, she is. She diagnosed my neck glands. That's a callback.
Though accounts of their birth are varied, they are sometimes said to have been born from an egg along with their twin sisters, Helen of Troy and Clytemnestra.
Holy shit.
In Latin, the twins are also known as the Gemini.
Okay.
So, but now I have more questions because
yeah.
Pollux is divine and Castor is mortal. And I would, I'm just very curious about that because Pollux.
Well, more proof that Castor's coming back for the sequel.
Could be. Or, I mean, let's be
honest.
Our
boy just rebounds.
It could be that the filmmakers just thought the name sounded cool.
And we're like, yeah, they're both connected to Troy.
Yeah. Because wouldn't, I mean...
Like, I don't know. Nothing else in this movie bears out the Greek connection.
No, not at all. And you would think a character like Castor Troy would want to be the divine one and not the mortal one, right?
Oh, right. Castor's the mortal one.
Castor's the mortal one.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
So, yeah, the naming makes zero sense to me as far as I can tell. Or, yeah, if it makes sense to anybody, I'd love to hear.
Yeah, write in. Write in, reader.
Write in, please. Yeah. Tell us. Release us from this... wondering.
All right, I'll continue.
Okay.
While in prison, Sean gets into a fight and almost beats a guy to death, and then Pollux is like, hell yeah, that's my brother. And then they talk about the bomb, where it's going off, and Sean's like, ha, yes, mission accomplished. Except, unbeknownst to him, Castor has woken up in the clinic, just a little peeved that his face was literally stolen off his body. So he grabs the only face around, Sean's, in aforementioned Jell-O, then torches the clinic along with everyone who knew the face switcheroo happened, including Canadian icon RIP. So Castor as Sean visits Sean as Castor in prison to bring him up to speed and taunt him a little bit and also kind of flirt with him a little bit. Like, he's very aroused to see himself.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Very weird. And then he actually, then springs Pollux out of prison in order to pretend to give up the bomb location so Castor can actually turn off the bomb and become a national hero while leaving poor baby Sean to rot in jail. The only thing left for Sean is to escape Supermax somehow, which he does really easily.
Yeah, shockingly easily.
By, like, almost getting electroshock therapy and then just setting off some fireworks that were stored in the control room.
I mean,
if I were storing fireworks, I would not put them next to a bunch of buttons. This I do know.
Yeah, yeah.
In the middle of an ocean.
Truly. Yeah.
Seems so. Many levels of not good. And then he jumps off the prison roof and swims 1,000 miles back to L.A. Done. Now cue, like, an hour of shooting. Caster is killing off a bunch of people in Sean's life and then goes and shoots up his former digs where his pal and his ex-girlfriend and son, spoiler, are hanging out with a just-returned Sean. There's a slight lull when Sean goes back to his home and sees his wife, and she's rightly freaked out, very skeptical about the face swap story, but decides to verify it by taking some blood from Caster, and lo and behold, she believes the science. So then she and Sean plan to take Caster down at the funeral of Sean's old mentor. And then we get another, even more operatic shoot down, shoot 'em up, in a chapel on a beach where doves... question mark keep flying in.
That's how you know it's John Woo.
Where are there all these doves from the beach?
Don't ask too many questions.
I was like,
why are they all indoors?
Maybe there are pigeons, maybe they're seagulls. Literally any other bird would make more sense than doves, but the doves keep on coming. And then there's also somehow a boat chase. And then finally, exhausted, we are released from this life of pain. Sean stabs Caster and then gets his face back and then, for good measure, adopts his son. The end.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Very well done.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, man. There's...
I don't even know. You've got to...
I basically just have a list of ridiculous things that... Like...
Okay, you say one ridiculous thing, and then I'll say one ridiculous thing.
Well, okay.
And we'll just keep going back and forth.
Okay, well, one thing I really noticed is that Caster leers at Sean Archer's daughter and asks him at one point if she's ripe. And then when Caster Troy has John Travolta's face, so he looks like her dad.
Yeah.
He goes into her room just in her underwear and he's just kind of looking her up and down.
Yeah.
And she's just
leering,
like,
at her.
Yeah. And she's kind of like, why is my dad staring at me like that? It's very disturbing. And they just kind of pass it off as this like, oh, boys will be boys kind of thing. And it doesn't matter that she's his supposed daughter. Like it was just very, very gross.
It's almost played for laughs, I think.
Yeah,
because it's
like,
oh, look at all the weird shenanigans that are gonna happen when you're in a different body. But in that moment, all I could think of it was from her perspective, where it's like, oh my god, like all of a sudden my dad is like in my space, because then he also like comes into her space, and he like hovers over her, really gets up in there and reaches around her.
I think he reads her diary too at one point.
I think it was his
wife's diary.
Because he was talking about they haven't made love.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, but I mean, with the daughter too. Like, the first time we meet the daughter, she has I don't know, like
the movie wants us
eye
to be
makeup
like,
on
outrageous makeup. But yeah, it's like, oh, okay.
Because she's the whole very obvious shtick is she's trying to find her identity after her brother has been murdered, and she's trying on all these different identities and her parents just don't understand. And then of course her dad switches faces with a mass murderer, and all of a sudden I think we're meant to see them as similar.
Oh shit, I didn't make that connection. Yeah,
but obviously they're not.
But they're
it's
not
a very different thing,
and
to
they're
swap
doing it
faces
than to wear like a different makeup look.
Yeah, or like thicker eyeliner. Like it's but yeah, they make a big deal about identity and face, and even that weird thing, like the thing that sets Sean Archer apart, his little tick is he'll run his fingers down.
That was gonna be my weird thing.
Oh, sorry. Okay, you go
no,
ahead.
No. Well, it was just that like his thing about like running his like hand with like an open-faced palm like down people's face. So we see him do it with his son in that like sort of opening scene, and it's like, oh, you know, that's weird. But it's supposed to be like a loving tender moment of connection between them.
Yeah,
again, strange, but whatever. Nice that, you know, a man is at least like trying to show physical affection to his son. And then he like keeps doing it. So he, like, then does it with his wife when he comes back to say, like, oh, I finally got the bastard. And he just sort of keeps doing it. And then when he's, like, in Castor's body, he does it, I think, a couple times to be like, it's me.
Yeah.
And it just looked so, like, again, I know it's, like, a very a hammy way of being like, oh, more face stuff.
Yeah.
But it just looked so grossly possessive.
Yeah.
It's like you're literally covering up someone's face with your hand.
And, like, it looks like it's like, here's your face, I will take it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like he's pulling their faces off.
Yeah.
In a way. Like, he's the face snatcher. But this could have been a very different movie.
The whole Boston face snatcher.
Yeah.
This is LA, but whatever.
But it's, yeah, the movie is very preoccupied with faces and identities and...
Yeah.
And it's like...
And how faces are, I don't know, like how we rely on them so much, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But they're not our complete identity, or we can...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think there's a moral lesson in there somewhere that we're supposed to get.
Maybe. But again, there's, like, so much in this movie that's like, okay, well, there's, like, also, like, a very obvious point you're making, and then maybe, like, a slightly subtler point that you're making less well.
Yeah.
And so these two things are like, well, okay, we can't dig too deep because there's not much left.
There's
to
not
go.
Much left. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't love the face. Well, and the other thing that's weird about the daughter is that there's, so we get this, like, very weirdly pervy moment where Castor as Sean is in the daughter's bedroom. But then later he has, like, this weird, like, protective moment.
Yeah.
Where she comes home with a boyfriend who's, like, literally trying to rape her on the driveway. And Castor comes barreling out of the house, punches the dude, and then sits her down and is like, defend yourself with this knife I'm giving you.
Yeah.
Like, next time he comes at you, just, like, chop those balls off.
Yeah, which is, I mean, to me that seemed... It could be read as a protective dad moment. It could also be read as he's claiming her as his property and nobody else should.
It's another possessive thing.
It's another possessive thing. And, like, giving her the knife is sort of a... Yeah, it seems like he's welcoming her into his sort of weird circle, which we see, you know, she ends up stabbing him with the knife.
Yeah.
In the leg.
Yeah.
And to no avail.
Yeah, no, he still runs just fine.
Just fine, even though it's a femoral injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think what this movie is trying to do is, like, show us parallels of, like, oh, look how you develop, like, different attachments to people when you're, like, living their lives, each other's life. So, like, it's much clearer when Sean is Castor, like, meets the ex-girlfriend and then is introduced to what she thinks is, like, their kid. And so then, like, oh, that's another point where Sean does the weird hand over face. Like, he does that with a kid.
That's right. Yeah.
And, so, like, he's clearly, like, making some kind of connection by, like, remembering his dead son through this new kid. And I think we're supposed to see a parallel with Castor doing something similar with the daughter. Like, he's sort of, like...
Like, bonding?
Somehow bonding. But it just comes off so wrong.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to see, like, yeah, just, like, the oversized personality that John Travolta is bringing to this character.
Yeah.
As anything... empathetic or
completely and it's bananas to me that nobody really says anything. Like, he's very demanding with Eve, Sean's wife, and very, very different. And she kind of, there are times where she's kind of giggly about it, like, she's like, oh, he's paying attention to me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, but that's, like, that's the opposite of how your husband acts. So, aren't you... I mean, no, not that... To be fair, it's not like you would guess that your husband swapped faces with someone.
That's not my first thought when I see someone acting differently.
But you would still be like, what is wrong with you? Why are you being like that?
Yeah, like, I'd be just like, oh, are you on drugs? What's happening? Yeah. Like, there are a lot of other reasons.
Have you been fired? Yeah. Do you have another family? Like, so many questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions about Eve in particular. Mostly to do with, like, intimate partner relationships and how she's just like so unaware. Like, you're right, she is just like so stoked that he is finally paying attention to her after, I guess, 6 years of neglect.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that they're still together.
Yeah.
And you know, like, however many months of like no sex. So girl is thirsty, and I guess she's just like, well, I'm gonna get it any way I can.
Yeah. But there are times when he is mean to her,
mm-hmm.
and bossy and aggressive,
mm-hmm.
and she just seems to roll with it.
Yeah.
And she's a smart lady. Like, she's
a doctor. She's a medical doctor.
She's a real medical doctor. And, but yeah, that almost seems to play very much second fiddle to her being like an unhappy housewife who just mm-hmm. wants things the way they are. I mean, or the way they used to be. Like, when Sean thinks Castor is dead and he goes back to Eve to be like, it's over, I'll go to therapy, I'll do whatever, she says, no, 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 I just want you. Like, she effectively tells him not to go to therapy.
That's right, she does.
And it's like, what? Like, shouldn't you be like, yes, please, go to therapy yesterday?
Yeah.
But
6 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he needs a therapist, and she... it's like, no, no, no.
Oh, he is just, not well.
Just
yeah.
be with me as a family. We'll be fine. Like, she seems very, very like, our love will save mm-hmm. us kind of thing.
I mean, it was also the 90s when, like, therapy was for, like, absolute weirdos.
It's true.
And freaks. So yeah. Or the punchline, you know?
Yeah. But it just seems like all she wants is her family whole.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's strange to me that she isn't really willing to take any steps to get it that way. Truly, she just wants it to look that way.
Yeah. Yeah. The nice happy family in suburbia, the parents and kids. Yeah. I think I have another parallel to the hand over face thing.
Okay.
So, like, trying to, like, find ways that, like, Sean and Castor, like, reflect each other. Castor likes licking faces.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gross. That's right.
So it's even worse than the hand over the face. He does like face licking.
Oh, that's so nasty.
He also licks Sean's face when he's in prison.
That's right. He does like licking faces.
He really loves licking faces, which, again, like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Love a good face licking. Yeah, so it's just, like, yeah, more possessiveness rather than any kind of... I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem like there's any other way to read that kind of interaction.
Yeah. Like, it's
just pervy.
It's very strange. And maybe because we're in a post-COVID world, like, it just seems unhygienic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't want anybody to put their hands on my face. Ever. And, yeah. And it is such a strange thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's like almost in lieu of a hug or, oh, you know, a little shoulder squeeze. It's like, oh, I'm going to run my hand down your face.
Yes.
No shade to people who have their little I love you quirks, but, like, that's a
step too far, I think.
That's a weird one.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't do it. Okay. Next weird thing.
When John Travolta is at the merry-go-round with his son,
mm-hmm.
and his son is shot,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden there is literally no one around.
Oh,
no one on the merry-go-round.
It's like an abandoned circus.
So it's like, how did he get it to go?
Yeah.
Why is it there? If there are people there, why is no one helping?
Yeah. John Travolta is just manning the merry-go-round himself.
Yeah, it's like he just commandeered it for the law and then was like, come here, son. Yeah.
We're going to have a bonding moment.
Get on this fake horse. Yeah, very strange.
That is very strange. But then also it makes it seem like this is a regular thing they do if Castor is able to follow them and stake them out.
That is true.
So it must be like a routine that he is able to track.
Yeah.
So they come to this merry-go-round all the time.
Yeah. And
Castor has time to get a milkshake while he's doing it.
Yeah, and it seems like it's in a park somewhere, so you would think there would at least be a couple of other kids running around, but
yeah,
you don't see anybody.
It's like in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like a rundown, decrepit merry-go-round.
Yeah.
It's very...
More's the pity.
Yeah, that would be cool. But yeah, that struck me. Like, did they just not have any extras, or... Do they just think this would be an effective way to tell the tale? And
maybe
why?
It's how, you know, in memory, because it's also sort of like colored a little bit differently.
Yeah. So
maybe it's Sean's memory.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how in memory, sometimes you just like narrow things down to like a little like really like focused point.
Yep.
And like all of the extraneous detail just like is totally blank.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like that, where he's like, he can only remember him and his relationship with his son, and everything else is like non-existent. Didn't happen.
Yeah. Except for Castor Troy's sexy mustache.
Except oddly that. Yeah. That's very detailed.
Yeah. But an enviable mustache. I think you're probably right. Like, that's the only thing that makes any amount of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Weird. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's going on with slow-mo?
Oh, very, very John Woo.
Okay.
Yeah. So this movie is like 2 hours and 20 minutes. It could tight 90.
Yeah, it could have.
It could have.
I would have been happier if it was a tight 90.
There's a lot of slow-mo and a lot
I was exhausted indoor by the birds. End.
Yeah, all the John Woo signature moves are in this movie.
Okay. Tell me the most absurd slow-mo moment for you, and I'll tell you mine.
Oh, I can't even pinpoint one. There are so many.
They're everywhere. It's outrageous. Okay, I'll just tell you mine.
Yeah, tell me yours.
It's when Sean goes to take off his wedding ring before his surgery.
Oh,
he just like, and you just see his hand sort of like, oh, then go to his ring. And it's, I was like, why? Why do we need a slow-mo for a man removing a ring?
Yeah.
I get when someone's running, that kind of looks cool sometimes, but this is stupid.
Yeah.
I don't need extra time where he's, like, reaching for something.
That's true. I did enjoy this slow-mo bit where Castor's in a speedboat, and then the speedboat, like, bisects... another boat.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed the extra time to appreciate that.
Yeah,
for sure.
That was great. And it would have been more effective had slow-mo not been used just willy-nilly throughout the whole
movie. Just constantly.
Yeah. It's like, you know what? If regular speed is fine, slow-mo is better.
For everything, it seems like. Absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. Why is that a John Woo signature? Like, does he just think it's super cool?
Only God knows.
Do you know?
Why.
Okay.
And John Woo, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think. Yeah, that's just.
Has he ever talked about it? Like, it's just
thing.
Like a.
Probably. He does it in like
everything.
All his movies. Yeah.
The worst Mission Impossible.
Yes.
Oh man. Yeah, I don't love slow-mo, particularly because it's so easily like self-satirizing. Like it just looks. Stupid after you've done it twice.
Yeah. The only person who can really do slow-mo well is Wong Kar-wai.
Yeah.
And that's his thing. Slow-mo is Wong Kar-wai's thing, and everyone else who uses it just looks like a chump.
See, okay, yeah, in Mood for Love,
mm-hmm.
That slow-mo, oh man, I didn't even, it doesn't even occur to me because it's so, like, it's not used like slow-mo is normally used.
It's so sexy and romantic.
It's so sexy. Yeah. And it feels like, yeah, literally time is slowing down because you're so enveloped by something.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, like, action bullshit, which is essentially just like, oh, look how something looks cooler when it's slower, even though it's supposed to be fast.
Well, and even the Daniels emulate that in Everything Everywhere All at Once. And it's done so well.
And in that sort of like
that in the alley Mood for Love, like, scene, yeah, homage. Very very homage to yeah. In the Mood for Love.
God, why didn't we watch In the Mood for Love this time? Maybe. Next time, maybe.
Yeah.
I love that movie so much.
Me too.
It's so fucking beautiful.
It really is.
Much more to talk about than just like tossing absurdities back and forth.
It's true. I mean, there are so many absurdities.
there are some tender moments though,
mm-hmm.
particularly between Castor and Pollux.
Right.
And it's mostly in these weird like shoe tying scenes.
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
Because
we've got so much masculine bravado going on. Yeah. And then this sort of like odd caretaker moment that sort of keeps resurfacing.
Yeah,
it's an odd counter to that.
It seems to be such a... It really builds closeness between the brothers, as does Castor's insistence on using the word bro,
mm-hmm.
even when Pollux tells him not to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very much a big brother, little brother kind of relationship, and Castor is always tying Pollux's shoes, but it almost makes Pollux seem like... It infantilizes him and mm-hmm. sort of makes him seem like he cannot tie his own shoes, when the reality is, like, Pollux built the bomb and is an engineering marvel.
Yeah.
But the movie sort of presents him as this sort of
like simple man.
Simple man who's ever reliant on his doofus. Big brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the shoe tying thing, yeah, it just seems like... Like a thing Castor can do for him,
mm-hmm.
but that he can also do for himself. He just lets Castor do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say, I didn't really feel like there was much emotional resonance in this movie at all. But when Pollux is killed and mm-hmm. Castor, as Sean, like, ties his shoelaces one last time, I was like, oh, that was tender. Kind of a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And really well done. And, like, sort of the only moment in the entire movie that I was like, oh, John Travolta might have a soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which brings me to my next question.
Ooh.
Is there such a thing as Scientology eyes? Because John Travolta has the same crazy eyes as Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Could be. Could well be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh. One, I mean, I have many more weird things to talk about, but the eye thing made me think of something not to do with eyes, but...
What a segue.
I've had a long day. When they take Archer's face off and you can see the face floating in the goo, his lips are together.
They're just, like, puckered a little bit.
Yeah. Like, it's almost as though they did, like, a wax cast of his face.
He's like,
and he kept his mouth closed so that he didn't get wax in there. And they were like, look, we took his face off. And there's just a little, like separation of his lips, but they're together.
Surely not, though. That's his real face.
I mean, I don't know. Science, man. That's... Must have been a reflex or something.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's something in lips that inherently stick together when they're off of a face.
Maybe. Yes, that would make sense. The
magnets?
Mouth wants to close.
Yeah.
Famously.
The lips turn into magnets when they're not on a face.
Much like the boots.
Much like the boots.
Which, okay, we need to talk about the prison.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a secret prison.
I like how our discussion is as chaotic as the movie is.
It's true.
We're not imposing any kind of order.
This was our break movie.
Yeah. Listen, we're relaxing.
Yes, this is fun for us. So the prison, supposedly a legit prison, just in the middle of the ocean...
On an oil rig.
On an oil rig.
Yeah.
Is called Erewhon Prison, which is the word nowhere backwards. Haha, very clever.
Clever.
And there seems to be zero accountability for this prison. Yeah. And it's not even clear. Like, it seems to be a place where the worst of the worst go, but not really. Like, it just kind of seems like a real mixed bag.
They just sort of toss whoever in there, it seems like.
Yeah. And they also have barrels of oil on the top of it. And when...
And fireworks.
When, yes,
honestly,
and
fireworks. Who has fireworks and
so
oil?
So when Sean Archer, wearing Castor Troy's face, escapes prison... He's running across the I guess landing pad of the oil rig,
mm-hmm.
and this helicopter with dudes in it starts shooting at him into these barrels of oil, which seems like a terrible idea.
It's terrible.
And then Archer with Castor's face jumps off of the oil rig many feet down into the ocean.
And somehow his body is not broken.
And magically swims to shore, wherever that is.
Somehow he also knows, so he's got an inner compass that's impeccable.
I like to think he hitched a ride on a whale. But I don't know.
Oh my god, he did a Jonah!
Yeah, or just like latched onto a shark fin and was just like, yeah.
Or he did a Swiss Army Man.
Maybe, yeah. But it was very, it's like he jumps in the ocean and you're like, well, he's dead. And the next scene he's like... driving in a car. It's like, how did that happen? This prison is supposedly nowhere. I don't understand.
And they say repeatedly, no one gets out.
Yeah.
No one gets out. We've got these magnet boots. No one gets out.
Yeah, because they
track you all the time.
Flip a switch where the boots stick to the floor and like you're... feet are held so fast to the floor that your body might fall over, but your feet are still on the floor.
Which I thought was a neat trick by everyone who did it, because, yeah. like, I could not. Also amazing that they didn't break their legs
trying to
do
that.
Yeah,
you'd have to have very flexible ankles.
Oh, yeah, which I don't. They cramp right up. No, thank you. Also, in the prison, there is, like, in sort of, like, the main area, like, the mess hall, I guess,
mm-hmm.
Like nature videos playing over and
yeah.
over.
Yeah.
What was with that?
I don't know. But then they also play the news?
Yeah, that's right. But like, but specific news. Maybe it's just to taunt.
Maybe.
Castor/Sean, who's in prison.
It's very unclear.
Because everyone else is like taunted by the nature videos. So maybe they're just finding the pressure points of everyone there.
Maybe. But everyone there, everyone else was like really into the news.
Yeah.
But...
who can say?
Because it's about Castor Troy / Sean Archer coming back to work and...
being a hero.
Being a hero. So Castor Troy's big strategy is, dressed as Sean Archer, looking like Sean Archer, I'm going to find this bomb and stop it and be a big hero and everyone will love me. And meanwhile, everyone will just think that Castor Troy is rotting away in prison.
Mm-hmm. Which could have worked.
Could have worked.
It really could have.
Flew too close to the sun, though.
Oh my god. Yeah. Another Greek myth. This brings me to my another absurd thing, that Castor as Sean is actually kind of a better boss than Sean is.
Kind of, yeah.
Because, like, he is much more gracious about accepting praise. He's much more collaborative and team-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
The first time that he behaves terribly is when Margaret Cho comes up to him and tells him, oh yeah, it turns out that Castor Troy is, like, escaped from prison.
Yeah.
And then he's like, what? And then he sort of like loses it. But up until that point, he has been so much nicer to everyone that he works with. And like his literal like trainees.
Mm.
And before, like, we see Sean just being an absolute dirtbag to those people.
Yeah.
He's like the worst boss. And yeah. He's supposed to be our hero.
He's very self-absorbed and sort of like his problems should be everyone's problems. And whereas, Castor doesn't have that issue.
Oh, no.
He wants to be loved.
He wants to be loved, but it somehow also manages to, like, create the result that he's, like, making a better workplace.
Mm-hmm. So what does this say about Castor Troy and the nature of needing to be loved or wanting to be loved?
Mm-hmm.
So he's a really good brother. He's a good boss.
Yeah.
He at least has sex with his wife occasionally. And
also gives his... daughter supposed self-defense lessons.
Yeah. Well, also slightly victim blaming her.
Yeah. Well, there's that too.
And staring at her when she's in her underwear. But
no one's perfect.
But like Castor seems to be able to have this this love for things and joy for things that Sean doesn't.
Yeah.
Because his whole world was, you know, erased when his son died, and he has somehow had to go on, which unfortunately means that the rest of his family, who also lost a child, has to sort of coddle him.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, which can be really, really hard. And so, yeah, it's really hard to take when especially when he's sort of making friends with Castor's girlfriend and talking to her and, you know, asking her questions and seeming to care about her and caring about the son. And it does almost seem like a second family that he's getting himself into. And then, of course, when, you know, the boy's parents are killed, immediately Sean brings the boy home and is like, surprise, he's our new son. And everybody's like, great. And no,
accepts it without question.
Yeah, no conversation. Like, he comes home with his, you know, his Sean Archer face back on, and everybody's happy. And then he says, oh, by the way, I have a question for you. And he pulls this boy out, and as if they're gonna say no in front of this boy. Like, and this boy looks shockingly like their son.
Yeah, like very close.
Very close. And so it's just like, oh, now I know how to love again because I have another son. We have replaced Mikey. So insulting Mikey
for the daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. It's insulting for the wife. And yeah. And I mean, Eve is very into it, but you also have to wonder, like, if he can't love without having a son or a proxy son around, what does that mean? And how does that, I mean, Castor doesn't know he has a son, but he has a brother.
Yeah.
And he is able to sort of show that camaraderie and that joy for living, even if he, you know, also loves murdering.
Again, it can be both.
Yeah. But yeah, it just really struck me that Sean Archer doesn't know how to love. He just knows how to, you know, make a facsimile of what he once had.
Yeah. Well, so I have like a couple thoughts. So one of them was there's a point in the movie where it seems really clear that, like, even though both of them seem to hate what their life is as the other person, they also actually kind of fit.
Yeah.
And there's a way that it makes sense, actually, that they're where they are now.
Mm-hmm. Like, if circumstances had been different.
Yeah. Or if they just don't change again. Like, yeah. They could easily just carry on, and they would actually probably both be happy. like the FBI status as director, like, you know, soothes Castor's, like, egomania.
Mm-hmm.
And he's regularly getting laid with someone that he thinks is hot. And he can, you know, have a child, like, or daughter that he's, you know, weirdly ogling and also productive of. Like, so it kind of like hits all the beats for him. And then Sean, like you said, gets a do-over family. So mm-hmm. he gets to start again with sort of none of the history of pain and loss that he's carrying with him up until this point. And so, yeah, both of those sort of like make sense where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Which then, like, strikes me as so odd that they're, like, fighting so hard to get back to where they were before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sean is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because he's a tortured soul. Yeah, and it seems like he's someone who is in love with the appearance of things more than the actuality of things.
Mm-hmm.
And his drive toward any kind of goodness and decency is more to do with just like the fact that it aligns with the way he thinks things should be,
mm-hmm.
rather than what feels right, I think.
Yeah.
So his anger at Castor is both like, oh, you like ruined my family, and also like you're a bad, like it's sort of like there's nothing more to it than just like gotta clean up the streets for you scum, you know.
Yeah, and it's been capturing him has been an obsession.
An obsession for 6 years.
Like, what do you do when that's...
He's put his life on hold. Like, he hasn't moved on.
Yeah.
Castor is off doing other shenanigans. Grabbing butts. The whole thing.
Licking faces.
Licking faces. What he does best.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Sean is just, like, fixated and obsessed and stuck and can't think outside of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What do you make of, or is there anything to make of the last scene of the final fight when Castor...
Which one?
Yeah, good question. When Castor is stabbed with the harpoon gun.
Oh, the final.
The final.
So they're on the beach.
They're on the beach, but Castor... So Sean fires a harpoon gun into his middle, and Castor ends up dying or, like suffering with his arms outspread.
Oh, like a crucifix.
Like kind a of. Crucifix. And I wonder if that's another nod that Castor... Like, I wonder if Castor does that on purpose. To sort of put himself in a Christ figure position. Mm-hmm. Or if that's just something that they... John Woo thought looked cool.
I mean, he does that when he walks into the chapel for the showdown,
yeah,
too.
That's true.
He walks in, like, sort of... And then standing in front of the crucifix does the arms outstretched thing while he's taunting Sean.
Yeah, that's right.
So that sort of begins the whole final showdown. And then, you know, culminates in where we end up.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought that was sort of like a full circle moment.
Yeah.
But it is also interesting to think of it as like sort of a taunt towards like goodness and sacrifice.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
Because he's still wearing Sean Archer's face.
Yeah.
So he looks like the protagonist.
And he also starts slicing away at his face, so it looks like he's got sort of like the crown of thorns bleeding
face thing. Whoa. I didn't think of that. Good point. And I mean, of course, pierced with the harpoon. And,
Yeah. Bleeding like, from the side, whatever.
There's
it runs
there.
Deeper. A little bit.
But also weirder.
Ways that don't quite make sense. See, this is the thing. Like, John Woo is very fun to watch most of the time when he's not fucking, like, stumbling over his slow-mos. But a lot of it just, it looks, it's just showmanship without any substance.
Yes.
It feels like.
I agree.
So it's so shiny,
mm-hmm.
and it's so silly and delightful in the moment, and then sort of, like, trying to tease apart, like, okay, what's going on here? It like, kind of crumbles.
Yeah, there's no real solid meaning. It's just...
Yeah, like, this looked rad.
Yeah,
let's bring in more doves.
And make them slow-mo. Get those slow-mo doves.
Can we train doves to fly slowly?
One way to find out.
Oh, no. Okay, let's talk about mirror images.
Okay.
And, I mean, there's just, like, sort of that one... like showdown scene where they're fighting between a mirror.
Right.
But then there's also that pancake. in sort of like the chapel showdown where there's sort of like this intricate like circle piece of like people coming in and pointing guns at each other.
Yeah.
So everyone kind of mirrors each other, but in a much more complex, like, structure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like that Spider-Man meme. Right?
I was trying to make some deep, insightful call.
Sorry.
Fuck you.
Okay, go on.
No, it's done. You were supposed to take it and add to it, and then I did. I was gonna... So, anyways,
that's what I thought of when I saw that.
No, but it is like it's now sort of showing like the parallel people in each of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like mother with mother, and yeah. like all of these other people that are sort of like each of their counterparts.
Yeah.
In this like circle of interconnected showdowns.
Yeah, which is kind of also reminiscent of that second family thing where it's like, look, mm-hmm. If we rearrange this a little bit,
yeah.
We can both be happier.
Yeah. Everything fits better.
Yeah.
Just kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think during that time, somebody says, what a predicament. Right? Caster Troy says, what yeah. a predicament.
What a predicament. Oh, we got to talk about the different performance styles.
Mm-hmm.
Of John Travolta and Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
Because I feel like a lot has been made about how, like, John Travolta and Nicolas Cage, like, worked really closely in prep to, like, mimic each other's mannerisms and, you know, make really close studies of each other so that they could, you know, be as close to the other person when they're, like, performing as such.
Mm.
But I don't know about you, but I thought that, like, the results were very different.
Yeah.
Like, the way that Nicolas Cage plays Sean is very different from the way that John Travolta plays Sean.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, like, how both of them play Caster. Yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it feels very, I mean, it feels as though Nicolas Cage is just really, really good at playing nutty characters.
Mm-hmm.
And John Travolta is more of a, like, yeah, his performance seemed sillier or, like,
mm-hmm.
dancier.
Yeah. And also more one note. Like, I feel like his version of Sean was actually very similar to his version of Caster.
Yes. Yeah. The only difference was maybe, like, more smiling and more movement in general. Whereas yeah. Nicolas
A little bit
Cage,
slinkier.
Yeah. Whereas with Nicolas Cage, he used the space, right? Yeah. As Caster Troy, he's all over the place.
And he's using his cape and he's like, oh man, that yeah. cape swishing.
Like arms everywhere, legs yeah. everywhere, jumping around. And as Sean, he's certainly more animated than John Travolta was, but you can tell he's trying to keep his cool or trying yeah. to be.
Well, and also sort of like projecting this kind of inner conflict that was nowhere the case with Sean as like John Travolta. Travolta is Sean.
Yeah.
Where he's, like, going through these, like, stages of grief and dysphoria and, like...
Yeah.
Like, he's doing a much wider range of emotion.
Yeah, than just sad.
Than just, like, sad and angry sometimes.
Yeah. Sad dad.
Yeah. Ugh, so many sad dads.
Yeah.
Somehow always, like... See, this is why I never connected with the sad dad trope before.
Mm.
The Mandalorian was the sad dad trope just up until like more recently was just like basically just like angry dad.
Yeah.
It was just like sad dad but like gruff and like tossing things and like yeah being kind of low-key pissed off all the time.
Yeah, not in touch with their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is also just, like, code for, like, terrible dad. So,
yeah.
Sad dad equaled terrible dad.
Yeah. Yep.
Not someone you want to hang out with more.
Totally. And, I mean, I think we can both agree that Sean Archer is not a great dad.
Oh, no.
I mean, notwithstanding the fact that he's just never around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not a great partner. He's not a great dad. And all of a sudden, yeah, Caster gives his family what his family needed.
Yeah.
And...
And we're not even talking about the central betrayal of Sean going off to do this super bonkers thing, not telling his wife or family, like daughter, but particularly his wife, not even thinking that it's going to be related to her in any way.
Yeah.
And then she, like, is literally raped by someone pretending to be her. Like, there's no possibility for consent when it's literally someone else.
Well, and she, when they're talking, when she finally realizes, you know, the stranger in her room is actually her husband.
Yeah.
She says at some point, we've been living together as man and wife for a week.
Yeah.
And she looks so guilty.
Yeah.
And instead of just saying I had sex with him, we've been living together as man and wife. Like, it's very coded and very cloaked in this sort of very old-timey language. And it's like, he basically is like, oh, I, you know, totally my fault, don't worry about it. But never,
it's like, are you like, okay? Like, oh, my bad that you, like, yeah, were coerced into having sex and now, like, you know.
Yeah.
Which, I guess on one level, yeah, no, it is your bad, dude. It's very much your bad. But, yeah. Like, also, fuck off.
Like, ask, yeah, your wife needs help, clearly. She's been assaulted. She's, I mean... Also, it's not like you were giving
her
any...
She just had sex with the man who murdered her son.
Yeah.
And now she's, like, fully coming to grips with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also, like, the emotional conflict of feeling like her husband was finally connecting with her again.
Yeah.
So she's just at the moment where she's like, I'm finally getting my marriage back, only to now realize that actually it's the most, like, ultimate betrayal of all.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's just like, sorry. I won't do it again. But yeah, like, it just until seems like, yeah, so not enough. Just you're right. It's completely erased from the narrative, really. Like, it's never dealt with.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Yikes. Well. There's that. I have a few more questions.
Okay.
I mean, this is maybe getting to question time.
Question time.
Question time. But who do you think cleans up all the bird shit in that beachside chapel?
I don't think
it's
those
pristine,
birds...
but those birds are just like always in there.
I think those are poop-free birds. Oh
my God. They don't have anuses?
I mean, probably not.
They're holy birds.
They seem to be holy birds, but without holes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll accept it. I'll accept it.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe that church has a janitor who just hates his job.
Oh, fuck. That'd be the worst job.
Yeah. Your whole job is to clean up.
Just like endlessly mopping.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. No good. Why do you think Castor Troy shaved off that beautiful mustache?
That is a quandary.
A thing of beauty. That and I wanted more of it.
Like a legit porn stash. Yeah.
It was good.
It was good.
I mourn its loss daily.
I mean, maybe it's a Samson situation and he just should have kept it on.
The secret to his power?
Yeah.
Is his mustache?
Yeah.
I mean, we all know it's Nick Offerman's, so...
Yeah. I mean, in this movie...
If he can grow a... Yeah.
It could be.
As discussed, it already has a mythic quality. It's leaning on the Okay, and lastly, are these two men supposed to be the same age?
I think so.
They do not look the same age.
No.
Although they are closer in age than I thought.
Okay.
But John Travolta looks like 20 years older.
Yeah.
Lived hard. They're like 5 years in difference.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. I think. Maybe I'm lying. But I think.
Probably right.
But does the movie want us to think that they're the same age?
I think, yeah. I mean, I don't think it thinks too hard about it, but I think, much like the height discrepancy.
Ah, yes.
It's, I think,
hand waved away.
Yeah, I think the movie is just like, pay no attention to this.
Look over here. Yeah. More birds.
Let's see it in slow motion.
Oh, no. All right. Anything else you want to talk about before we move on to moments of joy?
No, let's talk about moments of joy.
All right. What were your moments of joy, aside from everything we've already talked about?
Everything we've already talked about. One of the things I really, really enjoyed was that when Caster has Sean Archer's face, one of the first things he does, so it's John Travolta looking in a mirror saying, "This nose, this hair, this ridiculous chin." I enjoyed that.
It is a ridiculous chin.
It is. At least he knows.
Yeah.
I also enjoyed that the surgery was called a temporary trade of faces. It's just temporary. It's completely TTF. Reversible. Like, did they consult a physician at all? No, probably not.
Also, the way that they're like, yes, see how we're making, you know, essentially an ear from a 3D printer? Mm-hmm. That's the same thing as swapping faces.
Yeah, totally the same. And it's totally okay that you have different blood types. Don't worry about it.
Right?
Yeah, like, that's how they know, is they have different blood types. But it's like, you fools, you can't. You can't do a transplant. Like, literally any doctor. Like, did you ask any doctor?
This is Mandy Elliott, MD, telling us. Yeah.
I mean, Mandy Elliott, PhD, is telling us.
Oh, man.
I don't, I mean, if
But
if
how
I'm
will they
wrong,
tell the difference between them if it's not a blood thing?
Fingerprints?
Maybe a word. No, but he changes his hands, too.
Does he?
They've got different hands.
Do they?
Yeah. No. John Travolta has very hairy hands. Very, like, thick hands.
Thick hands.
And, like, Nicolas Cage isn't wearing those hands when he swaps.
Right, okay.
This
okay.
is because they have a total body swap, too, remember?
Right, that's why they had to be naked, because when I was...
Of course.
When the surgery started, I was like, why do they have to be naked? That's weird.
It's just a face surgery.
It's just a face surgery.
Why are they nude?
But, yeah.
For comfort.
Yeah, I suppose.
The breeze.
The breeze.
Yeah, well, okay. Best not to delve too deeply into the science of this.
Yeah.
Is the moral of the story.
It's true.
Oh, man. My favorite, one of my favorite moments was when Caster as Sean is, like, driving to his house in suburbia, and he just sort of has, like, this weird running monologue going on. So he's like, look at this place. I'm in hell. I may never get a heart on again. And then he drives past his house and sees the wife in the front area. And he's like, oh, yes, there we go. And then reverses. Just the delivery was very delightful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then another moment of joy was, we didn't talk about Dietrich, but Dietrich is one of the pals of Caster. And when, the FBI are mowing down his sweet pad, he's about to fire on them. And he just, like, matter-of-factly delivers the line, "I hate cops."
Just so you know.
Just so you know. I'm not shooting you because I like you.
This is not entirely self-defense.
Yeah. So, a good time. Loved it. Loved it.
Oh, did you also catch when Nicolas Cage calls L.A. Hell A?
No, I didn't.
I thought you'd like that.
Oh my god. Wow. What a weird movie this is.
Truly.
Do you want to hear some alternate casting choices for this?
Yes, I do.
Okay, they're so truly bonkers.
Okay.
Just imagine this, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone.
That would definitely make for a much worse movie.
But they have the same bodies. They have more similar bodies than Travolta and Cage.
I just can't imagine either of them being Caster Troy.
Yeah, no. I have no idea who would be which, but, like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Okay, another pairing, Michael Douglas and Harrison Ford.
Nope.
I present to you Bruce Willis and Alec Baldwin.
Oh, no. Oh, that's... I mean, closer, maybe.
And lastly, yeah. Robert De Niro and Al Pacino.
I mean, again, a very subdued... Just be like, Al, play it bigger. No.
Both of them would just be identical the whole time. There'd be no differentiation when they swapped.
Oh man, no. Yeah.
They're just muttering to themselves. This is actually something that made me really respect John Woo. So, Joan Allen was his first choice for Eve.
Mm.
And apparently She's the studio great. Wanted someone younger and to make her a stepmother.
Ugh.
Yeah, but Woo stuck to his guns and fought for Allen as the choice.
Nice.
Which, respect.
Yeah.
Joan Choosing Allen an is older awesome. Lady as a, like a... I mean, and she's not even that old. She's like,
no,
what, late 30s?
She still looks like a young, fine wife.
Yeah.
Especially, like, John Travolta looks quite a bit older than she does.
Oh, yeah. Then again, John Travolta looks older than everyone. Oh, my God. Okay, did you have any movie connections?
My only connections really were just to remark on, as I said.
Three Women.
Yeah, they're basically the same movie.
The same movie.
Yeah. No, I mean, of course, just had to think of all of the late 90s Nicolas Cage
mm-hmm.
extravaganza. And just think of, like, how does Castor Troy differ from, you know, these other characters that he played? Because mm-hmm. they all have similarities.
Manic energy, you mean?
Manic
yeah,
energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't really... There's nothing quite like this movie.
But with surprising twists. Like our boy holds a manic energy unlike anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So there are also moments of, like subduedness and quietness sort of tucked in.
Yeah.
So it isn't, like, one note. It's varied and surprising.
It's true. I think it's just, like, this movie... isn't the type of movie you'd typically see from someone who had won an Academy Award and won mm-hmm. all these accolades and
like it does, like we were laughing about like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, but mm-hmm. like there is a way in which that pairing actually makes more sense for this type of movie.
Totally. Yeah. Just like a big like
big dumb smash
shoot 'em up. Yeah. But I mean, it's so clear that they wanted Cage and Travolta for their personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like they, I mean, Travolta in so many ways just plays Travolta.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think, I can't really make any reasonable connections to this movie other than just to put it in the firmament of late 90s Cage movies.
It is in a category by itself. Yeah. With all the other Cages. Like recently saw just sort of a lineup of late 90s Cage like movie covers
mm-hmm.
and I mean Face Off Accepting actually has like sort of like a blue toned cover. Almost all of the other covers are like look at the same palette. They look identical.
Yeah.
They're all sort of like reddish orange. They've got sort of like two big faces on the front, sort of an explosion in the behat. So they look like, oh, is this a series or something? Like,
yeah.
They look the same.
Yeah, it's very...
Even though they're different production companies, they're different directors, like there's different stuff, but it's like this weird...
It's like a Nicolas Cage vehicle has to have certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, great. I didn't have any movie connections except for Three Women, so... That's that. All right, in summation, what did we learn? And juiciest bits, juiciest butts.
Well, I mean, Alessandra Nivola has to have the juiciest butt.
Oh, yeah. 2 years hence in Mansfield Park.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. The greatest
this
butt.
This is just a butt chrysalis.
Yeah.
And then soon we shall see it in all its glory.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and...
What's that biblical verse?
About
we see but a glass darkly, and now we shall see a butt... butt in full.
Buttley.
Yeah, Buttley.
Yeah, and juiciest bits. Yeah. How can I choose just one?
Yeah. I am also, you know, at a loss for words. I will say, this could have been juicier.
It could have
been. We could have had a lot more gore. And specifically, oh, we didn't even talk about this, how in the sort of clinic and surgery scenes, they really don't do very much in terms of showing us, like, the horror of, like, a faceless face.
Yeah, they don't at all.
It's like, only in sort of, like side profile or reflection, like, sort of, like, in some glasses and stuff, that we even get a sense that, like, oh, there's some goop there.
Yeah, very briefly we see a shot of Nicolas Cage without his face on. But yeah, it's very...
But it's also sort of like flash and half, like, yeah, gone. Yeah. We don't even really get a chance to focus on it.
No. Yeah, it's very antiseptic.
Yeah.
In that room. Like, everything is white, everything is quiet. And they just, do get the face sucker and just take it off and put it back on.
Wow, I hate that phrase so much.
Face sucker?
Stop. So I guess, yeah, my learning moment is that, you know, face swapping surgery is less juicy than you'd think.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess along those lines, I learned that 3D printing an ear was very easy in 1997, and we just didn't know.
It was Canadian science, again, yeah. Remember?
Yeah, totally. Love that Canadian science. Yeah,
Canadian science. It was ahead of the game. Specifically, Canadian science in LA.
Yes. Oh, and you can swim as far as you want in the ocean if you want to bad enough.
Yeah, and you're probably not going to break that many bones when you jump off an oil rig.
Probably not.
Probably not.
And also, blood type, schmub type. Who cares? Just do the surgery.
Just do the surgery.
We'll worry about
the details will iron themselves out later. So on second thought, maybe Canadian science isn't that great.
I mean, they're good at some things.
They didn't reject the faces.
They didn't reject the faces, so maybe they're onto something.
Yeah. Maybe blood type doesn't matter.
Maybe.
Oh man. Well, this was a delightfully stupid interlude.
It was. Thank you for discussing this very silly movie with me.
Let's do something a little bit smarter next time.
Okay, I don't think that'll be hard.
Okay, great.
Okay.
In summation, this has been The Juiciest Bits. I've been Charlie.
I've been Mandy.
See you later.
Bye.